Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, October 3rd, 2021. I'm reading on Thursday, October 7th. I'll begin with the most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for October 2021. Tom Green County, as of October 7th, City of San Angelo. 25,541 positive cases reported. 43 new positive cases. Deaths, 439. 286 from Tom Green County and 153 from other counties. 40 currently hospitalized. 626 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker by Diane Panatelio, USA Today Network. Tom Green County has administered more than 105,598 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of October 5th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 3.28% from the previous week's tally of 102,248 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 42% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of October 5th. The San Angelo Clubhouse wants you to smash out mental health stigmas and this van. By Elena Edgen, published October 7th. As part of celebrating World Mental Health Day on Sunday, October 10th, a San Angelo organization is inviting people to smash the stigmas surrounding mental illness with a hammer, literally, this Saturday. At 10 a.m., Saturday, October 9th, the San Angelo Clubhouse, which helps adults with mental illness, will allow people to write a mental health stigma on the van, then smash it with a hammer at 404 South Irving Street. Now in its second year, the event raises funds for the organization. San Angelo residents who want to smash the van with a hammer can do so by making any donation to the clubhouse. "I don't want anyone to not participate because they cannot afford to do it," said Amy Mizell Flint, clubhouse director. "So if they can only afford a dollar, that will work. All the donations received at the event will go a long way in helping the clubhouse with its mission of helping people living with mental illness." Free coffee mugs to vans. Here's how stigmas turn to smashing. The origins of smashing stigmas and items at the clubhouse started in 2020 when members were cleaning their attic and found a plethora of coffee mugs. "We tried selling them in a garage sale, but still had a ton left over," Mizell Flint said. One of the staff members suggested writing stigmas of mental health on the mugs, then throwing them against the concrete retaining wall we have outside. The first Smash the Stigma rally went so well, the clubhouse knew they had to do it again. Sadly, they were out of mugs and had to find something else. "I thought it might be fun to write stigmas on a car and smash the car, so I posted on Facebook and I asked if anyone had a vehicle that didn't run that they would donate to the clubhouse," Mizell Flint said. Later that same day, someone donated a van which used to belong to Denise Bloomquist, a San Angelo pastor and host of the Dialogue radio show. When the donor learned what the van would be used for, she happily agreed and thought Bloomquist would have as well. As part of Saturday's Smash the Stigma event, the clubhouse will also offer tours of their facility. Prior to the 10 a.m. smash, organizers said people are invited to meet and register at 9 a.m. to participate in Move for Mental Illness, hosted by the National Alliance on Mental Illness at the clubhouse. This walk will raise awareness and help support the San Angelo Alliance. Registration is $10 a person or $25 a family. San Angelo Railway Museum prepares haunted scare station with help from Hollywood, by Colin Murphy, published October 6th. For the first time in its 100-year history, the station at the Railway Museum of San Angelo will transform itself into a haunted house for Halloween. To help them create the right atmosphere, they brought Hollywood to West Texas. Shelby Bond, a veteran director and producer with 20 years of experience creating immersive, interactive, special effects-laden events around the world, has been working with the volunteers at the museum this week on the Scare Station. Bond, aided by Emmy Award-winning costume designer Felicia Rose, is in San Angelo to help create a haunted house experience that will combine sophisticated theatrics with the station's own legacy. Bond is the son of museum board member Linda Bond and said the history of the station and the people who frequented the facility throughout the years lends itself to a unique haunted house experience. I've worked with a lot of haunts in the past, Linda Bond said. A lot of haunts take place in a loft or something, but here I get to take the history not only of San Angelo, but this building in particular, and create an event that incorporates those aspects. Unlike a normal haunted house, we are going to put 100 years worth of ghosts into this place. You're going to be following the history of San Angelo, and it's going to be terrifying. Linda Bond said volunteers for the haunted house will act out a scenario where, as ghosts, they are doomed to wander the railway station, never quite able to arrive at their chosen destination. We thought it would be fun to play on the fact that there's 100 years of history here, Bond said. So Scare Station is an exploration of that. In different rooms, you might see people from the 1920s during the oil boom, or you might see people from the very early San Angelo times. They are trapped here, waiting to take the train somewhere, but they never get out of the station, Bond said. It's just an exciting opportunity to learn more about the history. Tickets are on sale now for the haunted house, and Bond encouraged interested parties to purchase tickets in advance. The Scare Station Haunted House at the Railway Museum of San Angelo runs from October 14th through the 31st and starts at 8 p.m. More information and tickets can be found at sanangelorailway.org/scarestation. San Angelo school counselor receives a handwritten note of sexual abuse. One arrested. By Elena Edgen, published October 6th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a child made an outcry of sexual abuse at school, according to an arrest affidavit. A school counselor received a handwritten note from a child that a man had sexually assaulted them, and the counselor contacted police. The child, who was younger than 14 years old, told investigators the sexual abuse started around April 15, 2020, and continued through September 30, 2021, records state. Police interviewed the man, who said the sexual assaults started in April 2020 and continued approximately twice a month through September 30th, 2021, according to the affidavit. The affidavit did not state where the abuse may have happened. Jose Dominguez Ramos, 50, was arrested Tuesday on suspicion of continuous child sex abuse of the victim younger than 14 years old. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $150,000 bond as of 11 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. Note, the San Angelo Standard-Times uses the singular they-them when reporting child-related crimes to further protect the child's identity. San Angelo City Council reaches decision on sanctuary city issue. Proclamation coming. By John Tufts, published October 6th. After weeks of public debate, city council members appear to have weighed in on the hotly contested issue of whether San Angelo should outlaw abortion. Anti-abortion advocates in favor of making San Angelo a sanctuary city for the unborn have asked city council since August to pass an ordinance declaring abortion to be murder, according to documents submitted to the city clerk's office. The San Angelo ordinance would outlaw abortions within the city and allow family members of a person who has an abortion to sue the provider and anyone who assists someone getting an abortion, such as driving them to a clinic. Advocates for making San Angelo a sanctuary city did not want that decision to be made by registered voters. They wanted 7 people on the city council to do it. It's very important for us that we get the city council to do this in their regular business on their agenda, said Ryan Buck, senior pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church, 90 East 14th Street, to a crowd of anti-abortion activists last month. On Tuesday, October 5th, however, City Council decided not to vote on the sanctuary city ordinance. By a vote of 5-2, City Council instead decided to pass a proclamation supporting the right to life and the Texas Heartbeat Bill, meaning that if anti-abortion advocates want something like a sanctuary city ordinance passed, they will have to do the legwork themselves for the issue to appear on the May ballot. While there are no abortion clinics in San Angelo currently, passing such a measure has divided both citizens and city council members about who should get to make the decision, the people or their elected representatives. Residents clash over abortion during council meeting. Earlier that day, at about 9 a.m., there was hardly an empty seat at the McNeese Convention Center, 501 Rio Concho Drive, where a packed audience listened to more than a dozen people share their thoughts during public comments with city officials. A resident from Single Member District 2 in favor of the ordinance stepped up to the podium with a frame in her hands. She recounted having an abortion, a choice she said left her feeling pain and regret. After speaking a few minutes, the woman held up the frame. Its contents appeared to contain a certificate and a pair of tiny socks behind glass. "Unfortunately, this is the only way I can introduce my daughter to you, and I would ask you to look at her, to know this is a little life that would have turned 32 years old this month." Other speakers made their own impassioned pleas, urging the city not to pass the resolution. "Being pro-life means pro-all lives. Otherwise, you are just pro-birth," said a woman from Single Member District 3. "Being merely pro-birth is ensuring that tomorrow there will be more children whose only meal comes from the school lunch program. If you want to be known as a sanctuary city, be a sanctuary city for all lives, not just embryos." After about 90 minutes, council members adjourned for a closed executive session in which officials can seek confidential legal advice from an attorney. City Attorney Teresa James was slated to advise council members Tuesday on what ramifications the city might face in designating San Angelo a sanctuary for the unborn. City Council approves proclamation, but not a ban. Council members returned to their seats after nearly an hour and continued the meeting. San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter began by reading a statement. "I propose directing the city attorney to bring to the next council meeting a proclamation supporting the right to life and supporting the Texas Heartbeat Bill," Gunter said. When asked to clarify city council's stance on the issue, Gunter went into more detail. "We, as a city council, support the right to life and support Texas's Heartbeat Bill, which is in fact law. It's the most restrictive law in a state in the United States of America," she said. Council voted 5-2 to create a proclamation supporting the Texas Heartbeat Act, a law the U.S. Justice Department is suing the state of Texas over, as an alternative to passing an ordinance outlawing abortion in the city of San Angelo. Single District Council members Larry Miller and Lane Carter voted against the proclamation. Gunter said those who want San Angelo to become a sanctuary city for the unborn can follow the guidelines set forth in the city charter to bring the issue to registered voters in May. "The citizens under the charter have a right to form and initiate the committee to put the presented ordinance on the May ballot for a vote of the people," Gunter said. Not everyone was pleased with the outcome. Mark Lee Dixon, director of Right to Life of East Texas, said he was appalled by City Council's decision. In previous rallies, Dixon attended in San Angelo to garner support for the Sanctuary City Initiative. Dixon said it was the responsibility of elected officials to pass an ordinance outlawing abortion, not their constituents. "Proclamations passed in support of the Texas Heartbeat Act are not substitutes to passing ordinances outlawing abortion," Dixon said Tuesday in a message to the Standard Times. Gunter says, "I strongly support taking the issue to the citizens." Gunter, who voted in favor of allowing the decision to be left to the voters, explained her rationale. I strongly support taking the issue to the citizens because I believe that we do not have the right to take their voice or their vote away from them, Gunter said. No city council members, Gunter said, at least to her knowledge, support abortion. For her, declaring San Angelo to be a sanctuary of anything was a slippery slope on other social issues. Becoming a sanctuary city for the unborn means you start opening the door to becoming a sanctuary city for this and a sanctuary city for that, Gunter said. The reality is that the ordinance had no enforcement behind it. None, she said. It pits citizen against citizen, she said. While city council may have delayed the fate of abortion in San Angelo, Gunter believes that when the time comes, anti-abortion advocates will get what they want. I believe the sanctuary city issue will pass when taken to the public, but I think the public has a right to vote, Gunter said. Noting, she encouraged all citizens to vote in the next election, no matter if the odds appeared stacked against them. Every vote counts, she said. What will it take to get the sanctuary city measure on the ballot? The process of getting a measure to registered San Angelo voters on the May ballot will take hundreds of signatures, petitions, forms, and time, city officials said. Residents will have to follow Section 47 of the city charter, initiative and referendum. The charter gives people the opportunity to review any ordinance or resolution that we already have on the books, said City Clerk Julia Antilli during an interview with the Standard Times. Antilli said residents would likely need an initiating committee of 5 people and then sign petitions with not less than 25% of the number of voters who cast ballots in the last mayoral election. The number of people who voted in the last mayoral election was 6,048, Antilli said. That would be 1,512 signatures. Those seeking more information can read Section 47 of San Angelo's City Charter online at cosa.us/government/city-clerk/city-charter-code-of-ordinances. San Angelo man arrested after apartment fire. Officer's face fractured at hospital. By Elena Edgen, published October 6th. A San Angelo apartment employee woke up to a smoke-filled unit Tuesday, which led to a resident's arrest and an injured officer, according to a 5-page arrest affidavit. About 5:35 a.m. Tuesday, October 5th, first responders arrived at a structure fire at the Bella Vista Apartments, 4125 Ben Ficklin Road. A maintenance employee called 911 after waking up to a smoke-filled apartment. The employee ran out to several people who were standing outside a unit with smoke coming from inside, record state. After the building was evacuated, a San Angelo fire marshal investigated the unit and discovered a fire in the bedroom and kitchen. The apartment's resident told investigators he had been barbecuing inside his apartment, according to the affidavit. Investigators noted the bedroom fire appeared to be intentionally set on the bed, which led to the wooden frame catching ablaze. The kitchen fire involved a cooking sheet with clothing on it. Both fires appeared to be set with a lighter, record state. San Angelo police detained the resident at the apartment and an ambulance took him to Shannon Medical Center for minor burns. While there, the resident fled the emergency room through an exit door into the ambulance bay, according to the affidavit. Hospital video surveillance showed a police officer running after the man who then punched the officer's face and head several times. The officer received a left orbital fracture, lacerations, and bruising, record state. The officer apprehended him with the help from Ballinger EMS, who were in the ambulance bay, as well as Shannon staff members. Shannon also treated the officer's facial injuries and released the officer. Jimmy Darrell Keith, 61, was arrested on suspicion of arson of a building habitation, recklessly causing damage, assault on an officer, and evading arrest detention. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $500 bond as of 4:31 p.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. San Angelo MLK Park, closer to having permanent restrooms, NAACP to apply for funding. By Elena Edgen, published October 5th. A years-long fight to get restrooms at Martin Luther King Jr. Park moved forward Tuesday after City Council agreed to let a local NAACP chapter apply for funding. About 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 5th, City Council heard a resolution allowing the San Angelo chapter of the NAACP apply for grants to build permanent restrooms at Martin Luther King Jr. Park, 2121 Martin Luther King Drive. For decades, the park has relied on portable toilets. Members of the San Angelo NAACP created a petition and met with City Council and the Parks and Recreation Department 2 years ago, but were unable to get the funding. Since 2019, residents throughout the city have talked to us about the fact there are portable restrooms there that have been there for nearly 20 years, said Shirley Spears, a San Angelo NAACP president. People who live in that area also have complained there's no counter space to change diapers, and so you limit the use of that park. That is why we believe the city needs to be responsible for installing permanent restrooms, Spears said during an interview with the Standard Times. Along with being a neighborhood park, MLK Park has been the site for MLK Day and Juneteenth celebrations, a Black Lives Matter march, and numerous events over the decades. We know that it's not just there in MLK Park with portable potties, but people from all over who come for special occasions need to have the ability to use the restroom, and those portable potties do not fit the bill, Spears said. Tuesday's resolution stated that if NAACP secures $250,000 in grants, the park could get restrooms. The estimate is from the city on how officials believe it would cost to construct and design restrooms and build sewer and water lines. Operations and maintenance would be $12,000 a year, which might come from the city general fund. Now, since the city cannot find the money to build it, then we are going in the route of trying to get grants to help the city provide what the citizens are asking for, Spears said. As an organization, we are basically standing in the middle, trying to help facilitate that process. Lucy Gonzalez, council member for District 4, moved to approve the resolution. It was approved 7-0. Here are the San Angelo City parks that have restrooms. A search through the city's list of parks online revealed 16 parks have restrooms, 5 parks have portable toilets, and 17 have no restrooms on site, according to information the city last updated in January 2021. Parks with restrooms. Harmon Park, also known as Picnic Bend, 1201 North River Drive. Hot Water Slow Park, 2375 Red Bluff Road. Jaime Padron Memorial Park, 2730 Ben Ficklin Road. Kids Kingdom, 290 West River Drive. Kirby Community Park, 1401 Edmond Boulevard. Lake Park, 1608 South Concho Drive. Lone Wolf Bridge, 700 East Avenue K. Mary E. Lee Park, 2160 Mary E. Lee Road. Middle Concho Park, Middle Concho Drive. Mountain View Park, 3031 Freeland Avenue. Pecan Creek, 8455 Country Club Road. Restrooms at the Pavilion. Producers Park, 1805 Ricks Drive. Santa Fe Park, 605 West Beauregard Avenue. Spring Creek Park, 21 Fisherman's Road. The Bosque, 330 South Irving Street. Visitors Center, 418 West Avenue B. Parks with portable toilets include Brentwood Park, City Park, Glenmore Park, Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Park, Unidad Park. Parks with no restrooms include Bell Park, Brown Park, Civic League Park, El Paseo de Santa Angela Park, Knickerbocker Park, Meadow Creek Park, North Concho Park, Old Town, Red Bluff Circle, Rio Concho Park, Rock Slope Park, Santa Rita Park, Shady Point Circle, South Concho Park, Sulphur Springs Park, Sunken Garden Park, Webster Tot Lot Park. Oktoberfest in San Angelo event raises funds to support local Boy Scouts, by Colin Murphy, published October 4th. Set in a building, some organizers said even resembled a German beer hall, the local chapter of the Boy Scouts of America held an Oktoberfest event, hosted by the Fort Concho Stables on Friday. Featuring German food, a polka band, games, and contests, the event was just one in a series of Oktoberfest events around San Angelo, inspired by the cultural heritage of Germany. The contests included Best German Attire, a Stein-Holding Tournament, the Mustache Tournament, the Best Polka Waltz Dancing, and the Best Chicken Sound Impersonator. Proceeds from the event went to the Texas Southwest Council, Boy Scouts of America. Ozona and Sonora community grieve loss of school teacher who died in motorcycle accident, by Melissa Perner, the Ozona Stockman newspaper, published October 4th. Ozona and Sonora communities are grieving together after receiving the news of a couple's tragic death Sunday morning. Rachel and Ray Ugolite, both 51, died in an accident after the motorcycle they were riding hit a deer on Ranch to Market Road 3130, about 24 miles east of Sonora, according to a report from the Texas Department of Public Safety. The event occurred around 9:16 a.m. Sunday, October 3rd. The couple was pronounced dead by Sutton County Justice of the Peace, Joseph Harris, the report stated. Rachel Orgelite taught sixth grade math at Ozona Middle School. She previously taught in Ozona Elementary School and at Sonora ISD. In 2018, Rachel also ran for Sutton County Treasurer. The couple lived in Sonora. Grief counselors were at Ozona Middle School on Monday to assist with staff and students. The CCCCSD family is mourning the loss of one of our beloved staff members, Rachel Orgelite, and her husband. Our prayers go to their family and the staff and students, said CCCCSD Superintendent Raul Chavarria. The couple had two children, Liam, 23, and Megan, 26. Rachel and Ray celebrated their 29th wedding anniversary in July. The couple was also members of the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association in San Angelo. Rachel was one of the kindest people I have ever known. She was a great teacher and a wonderful person. OMS was blessed to have her on our campus. I will continue to pray for their children, Megan and Liam, as they have lost so very much, said OMS 8th grade teacher Dana Criswell. Fellow teachers and students' parents remembered Rachel as a great teacher and friend. Ozona Elementary teacher Kimberly Harris said, Mrs. Yorgelite always had a smile greeting everyone every day. She made math fun for all students, and they knew she believed in them. Harris's son had Rachel for a teacher this school year. They were some of the best, most selfless people, a light in this world, said former student Caitlin Lippham. Mrs. Orgelite was and always will be one of my favorite teachers, one of the few that can make math enjoyable for me. Ozona High School math teacher Kyle Barker said Rachel was a beacon of light and truly professional. We admired her more than she could have ever imagined, Barker said. Ray Orgelite, or Yogi, as he was known by his friends, worked for Epic Permian LLC. Co-worker Oscar Vargas said the couple were good people and a great family. We often talked about our kids. He was very proud of them. He was very soft-spoken, a quiet guy. He will be missed. What a horrible tragedy, Vargas said. The couple were on a 2014 Harley-Davidson motorcycle traveling east when the motorcycle struck a deer in the roadway, causing the motorcycle to roll onto its side and then proceeded to flip over multiple times before coming to a stop, the report stated. Road conditions were clear and dry. The accident was investigated by DPS Trooper Justin Durr of Junction and DPS Trooper Timothy Grace of Sonora. They were assisted by the Sutton County Sheriff's Office. As of Monday, October 4th, funeral services are still pending. Power surges and electrical fire at Shannon Clinic keep San Angelo first responders and AEP busy. By Elena Edgen, published October 4th. A power surge in downtown San Angelo temporarily stopped traffic signals from functioning Monday, and minutes later, a structure fire was reported at Shannon Clinic, according to police scanner traffic. A hospital spokesperson said the two incidents were unrelated. About 1:15 p.m. Monday, downtown San Angelo experienced a power surge. Minutes after the lights returned, dispatch reported a structure fire at Shannon Medical Center Clinic on 120 East Beauregard. There was a small electrical fire in the basement. No one was injured, said Shannon Hospital spokesperson Lindy Stone. Dozens of doctors, nurses, and staff could be seen standing outside the building Monday as first responders entered the clinic. Appointments Monday were canceled and will be rescheduled, according to Stone. Power outages may have been caused by truck. At 1:27 p.m., San Angelo police issued a Nixle alert stating traffic signals downtown are not working at this time. A reporter walking downtown also noted crosswalk signals were out. Blake Burchard, AEP media contact for San Angelo, said work crews were assessing several outages around town, one of which may have been caused by a Republic Services truck. Burchard said a Republic Services truck backed into a pole off of Highland Street, which damaged a breaker. There were no injuries, according to Burchard. By about 2:30 p.m., most power to customers had been restored. San Angelo organization aims to raise money to build Hispanic Museum and Cultural Center. By Elena Edgen. Del Velazquez envisions a future more connected to its past. Beginning in 2019, he and others laid the groundwork for a new museum and cultural center, one that showcases the contributions made by its Hispanic residents in San Angelo. Getting the museum built, however, might take some time. We're at the very early stages of this initiative, so we're calling out to the community to, if they are interested, contact us and let us know, said Velazquez, who serves as president and CEO of the Hispanic Heritage Museum and Cultural Center. The idea to create a museum happened 2 years ago after an event that traditionally celebrated Hispanic history was rained out. Prior to 16 de septiembre in 2019, the national holiday for Mexican independence, there was a traditional event that was canceled, Velazquez said. Susana Valenzuela reached out to me and said, let's do something to draw attention to this. The duo created an event to kick off Hispanic Heritage Month at City Hall. They created a Facebook page, Hispanic Heritage Museum and Cultural Center, where they shared stories of Hispanic people who made an impact in the area. The response there was obviously a desire for people that are interested in learning more about Hispanic culture in San Angelo and the surrounding counties, he said. The organization grew, and it held its first fundraiser in October 2020, virtually due to COVID-19. We received really good support to start raising the funds to, at some point, get a building and a museum, Velazquez said. We plan on having art exhibits, history, and educational instruction on topics like culinary, dance, and music. It's just an awareness, an educational celebration of these accomplishments that make us unique throughout West Texas, he said. Velazquez and others will have 154 years of city history to pour through, but a few names already come to mind. Thinking back on some noteworthy Hispanic people tied to bettering San Angelo, Velazquez mentioned council members, veterans, restaurateurs, and business people. That includes Maria Cardenas, who in 1976 spearheaded a successful campaign to create a single-member district voting system, used today by the city of San Angelo. Cardenas' efforts helped make city council more representational of the public. She was later elected in 1978 to serve City Council for District 3. More information about Cardenas and other local Hispanic figures can be found on the organization's official website, sanangelohispanicheritage.org. People interested in supporting the organization with donations, research, or can reach out via Facebook or email hispanicheritage.sa@gmail.com. Donations can be made online, and the organization is looking for research and memorabilia relating to Hispanic culture. My Body, My Choice chants San Angelo residents in Women's March to protest Texas abortion law, by John Tufts, published October 6th. Reagan Moore was afraid to speak up for herself when she was a little girl. For 13 years, Moore said she lived in a house where she was encouraged to be quiet. On Saturday, the now 20-year-old Moore held a microphone on the steps of the Tom Green County Courthouse and raised her voice. "We need to stand up and be ourselves," Moore said, her words echoing over a crowd of about 200 people. "Fight for our rights. Don't let anyone control you." Moore said she hadn't planned on addressing the audience, but something moved her to speak. "There are other people out there, just like me, who didn't have a voice, or don't have one now," Moore told the Standard Times. "I couldn't just stand there. I had to do something." Moore wasn't alone. Joining her were hundreds of other San Angelo women, men, and children who gathered Saturday, October 2nd for a women's march, a peaceful protest in support of women's rights. Local organizers for the rally said they marched to protest a law banning most abortions in the state, Texas Senate Bill 8. Legal experts say the law signed by Texas Governor Greg Abbott is among the most restrictive in the nation, prohibiting abortion once a fetal heartbeat can be detected, often before most women know that they are pregnant. It does not include exceptions for pregnancies resulting from rape or incest, and allows private citizens to sue abortion providers for violations. Pleas to halt the measure before it went into effect last month were ignored by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Justice Department has since sued the state of Texas, arguing the law is unconstitutional. "We're going to send the Supreme Court and lawmakers across the country a clear, unified message. The attack on our reproductive rights will not be tolerated," said national organizers for the Women's March on the group's official website. A spokesperson for the Women's March called for rallies to mobilize and defend reproductive rights in cities across all 50 states Saturday, which included San Angelo. Despite early morning showers that drenched the Concho Valley, the threat of rain couldn't drown out the chorus of people who marched from City Hall down Irving Street until reaching the courthouse a block away. Many participants held signs and banners in support of abortion access as the crowd shouted, "My body, my choice. This is what feminism looks like." About 10 a.m., demonstrators gathered at the courthouse and listened to about half a dozen speakers address topics covering abortion, teen pregnancy, and health care. When it was her turn to hold the microphone, Ryan Maskell revealed a hard decision she faced while in high school. At age 18, Maskell discovered she was 10 weeks pregnant. "The fact is that I found out at 10 weeks, which in today's world is past the point where I would have the ability to make that choice," Maskell said. Maskell told the crowd she made the decision to keep her pregnancy and made the decision to have another child 8 years later. "What happens with our body should always be our choice. This is never an easy choice, but it should always be our choice. Pro-choice is pro-life," Maskell said. As abortion advocates march, San Angelo on verge of becoming a sanctuary city. Abortion advocates marched days ahead of the next regularly scheduled San Angelo City Council meeting, in which officials could take steps to limit local abortion access. City Attorney Teresa James will speak to council members Tuesday, October 5th during a closed executive session. Officials will hear what legal challenges and ramifications the city might face in designating San Angelo a sanctuary for the unborn. An anti-abortion group submitted a draft ordinance in August to City Council that would outlaw abortion within city limits and declare abortion to be murder, according to documents from the city clerk's office. While there are currently no abortion clinics in San Angelo as of Saturday, the debate on passing the measure has divided both citizens and city council members themselves on who should get to make the decision, the people or their elected representatives. During an interview with the Standard Times in September, Mayor Brenda Gunter suggested making San Angelo a sanctuary city should be up to local voters. 2 weeks after her statement, District 3 council member Harry Thomas appeared to side with sanctuary city advocates who want city council to skip the ballot and pass the ordinance themselves. I think that the citizens of San Angelo have elected us to make decisions that will allow us to go forward on a lot of issues, Thomas said September 21st. Quite honestly, I think the ordinance could ultimately help some of these young ladies make the correct decision. Moore hopes those kinds of decisions will be hers to make, not the city council. Let us have our choices, Moore said on Saturday. We're doing the best we can, and we're trying to make the right choices for our future and for the future of those that come after us. Organizers for the Women's March in San Angelo said they hope demonstration Saturday will send a clear message to city council officials ahead of their next meeting. There's not just one voice here in San Angelo, said Dee Parisot. I think city officials need to be more open-minded. Prior to the beginning of the Women's March, Parisot and co-organizer Michelle Troyer were standing near the trunk of an SUV loaded with extra signs the pair handed out to those who wanted them. Both women wore T-shirts and earrings with the matching phrase, "Bands off our bodies." I think San Angelo as a whole needs to be heard, said Troyer. Not everybody wants a ban or a sanctuary city. We have to pay attention to the young voices and to the voices of all the women here. Fatal accident after chemical leak in Big Lake to cost West Texas Gas Company millions. By Elena Edgen, published October 1st. A West Texas oil and gas corporation will have to pay millions of dollars in fines after pleading guilty in federal court to violating the U.S. Clean Air Act, in which a Big Lake resident died and another was injured. Five subsidiaries of West Texas Gas Incorporated, which involves seven Texas gas processing plants and one in New Mexico, reached a settlement with the United States, according to a Department of Justice news release on Friday. The allegation stated the company violated the U.S. Clean Air Act, which caused danger to employees and the environment. West Texas Gas Clean Air Act violations cost lives, said Todd Kim, Assistant Attorney General of the Justice Department's Environment and Natural Resources Division. Today's settlement sends a strong message to the industry that the Justice Department will vigorously enforce Clean Air Act requirements that protect workers, neighboring communities, and the environment by preventing dangerous chemical releases like these, Kim said. What led to complaints against West Texas Gas Incorporated? The civil complaints filed against WTG Procession LP, WTG South Permian Midstream LLC, and Davis Gas Processing Incorporated stated both companies violated Section 112R of the Clean Air Act and Chemical Accident Prevention Regulations. Prosecutors said these regulations are meant to save lives. They require owners and operators of facilities to perform adequate and timely equipment inspections and repairs, train employees involved in the operation and maintenance of equipment, evaluate the hazards of the chemical processing equipment, and ensure that operating procedures contain clear and comprehensive instructions to safely operate process equipment, according to the release. The Environmental Protection Agency found the violations after a catastrophic fire killed an employee at WTG Gas Processing LP's East Vilmore Gas Plant in Cahoma in November 2015, records state. During the fire, thousands of pounds of flammable and toxic substances were released into the air, according to the release. Prosecutors said it would not be the last time a West Texas Gas Incorporated employee died as a result of a fire, causing millions of dollars worth of damage. This company's blatant disregard of clean air regulations had devastating real-world consequences, said Parak Shah, acting U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Texas. In August 2018, A leak of toxic hydrogen sulfide led to the death of a Big Lake employee by exposure and another injured at the Big Lake Gas Plant LP. The leak resulted in a criminal case against the company, which pleaded guilty to negligent endangerment and violating the Clean Air Act, records state. The Big Lake plant also admitted it knowingly failed to properly update its risk management plan following the incident, which is legally required, according to the release. Larry Starfield with the Environmental Protection Agency's EPA Office of Enforcement and Compliance Assurance said the company failed to protect the lives of its workers. The tragic deaths due to the failure by West Texas Gas to safely manage hazardous chemicals as required by law demonstrates the severe dangers that these violations pose to workers, nearby communities, and the environment, Starfield said. Today's settlement requires West Texas Gas to take concrete steps to prevent future accidents and will improve air quality in the vicinity of these facilities, he said. What happens next for Big Lake Plant and West Texas Gas? As part of the plea agreement with the Big Lake Plant, the company must pay $3 million fine, and it acknowledged they may have to pay restitution to the victims and the costs of supervision, according to the release. The five subsidiaries will have to spend up to $5 million on compliance measures and over $3 million in civil penalties. The settlement also requires them to take steps to prevent chemical accidents and improve safety, the release stated. Another part of the settlement requires them to hire an engineering firm from outside the company to recommend actions to improve process safety. They will have to complete at least 6 of the 8 plants. 2 of the plants were closed, according to the release. These remaining plants will have to implement an environmental management system to improve their compliance with all federal, state, and local air pollution-related requirements, not just those dealing with preventing chemical accidents, the release states. San Angelo to be featured in NBC TV series on COVID, Dying to be Wrong. See the trailer. By Elena Edgen, published October 1st. San Angelo will be featured in a 4-part mini-documentary series premiering later this October on NBCLX, examining an America divided by COVID-19, according to the network's official website. In a deeply divided Texas town plagued by mistrust of the public health authorities, some say the COVID death toll is a hoax or greatly exaggerated. Others are left picking up the pieces after a loved one passes, the website states. The series, Dying to be Wrong, takes a deep dive into how COVID-19 has divided the nation and was created by NBC storyteller and San Angelo native Cody Broadway. Now living in Los Angeles, Broadway returned to his hometown roots to interview several San Angelo residents about the coronavirus and its impact on the community. Interviews include Mayor Brenda Gunter, local health authority Dr. James Vretis, Catholic Bishop Michael Siss, Zachary Sutterfield, a San Angelo resident and survivor of deadly San Marcos apartment fire, as well as Standard Times investigative reporters John Tufts and Colin Murphy. Where you can watch Dying to be Wrong. Dying to be Wrong, an NBC 4-part docu-series detailing the cost of COVID-19 misinformation in San Angelo, will hit NBCLX on October 18th. Watch NBCLX on TV, on Peacock, Roku, Zumo, Apple TV, YouTube TV, Fubo TV, and on Xfinity, Verizon, Optimum, Spectrum, Cox Cable, and select cable systems across the country. Railway Museum of San Angelo replaces broken air conditioner. By Linda Thorson Bond, special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published September 30th. For the past year, the Railway Museum of San Angelo has been hot. Literally hot, that is. The 7-ton heating and air conditioning system broke, and the temperature on the second floor has been over 92 degrees every day of summer. Visitors still chose to tour the second floor to see the scale model trains, even spending over an hour looking at the N, HO, and O gauge railroads. But parents and children often came down the stairs disheveled and covered with sweat. Susana Valenzuela, president of the board of directors, said relief is in sight. The Railway Museum of San Angelo, RMSA, board of directors is proud to announce that we have received a grant from the San Angelo Health Foundation in the amount of $73,314 for the purchase of a new HVAC system, Valenzuela said. In early 2021, the Railway Museum's heating and cooling system failed. The board of RMSA hired Angelina Ansorio Torres of Jelly Nonprofit Consulting to write the grant to replace the inoperable system. With her assistance, we were able to put together a successful grant submission. Replacement of the system will begin immediately, allowing the museum to be energy efficient and have cost savings that will be used towards operation of the museum. We appreciate the commitment of the San Angelo Health Foundation to make San Angelo a wonderful place to work and live for current and future generations. The preservation of the historic Orient Santa Fe Depot has been ongoing for almost 25 years. In 1996-97, the depot underwent restoration and since then operates as a museum containing railroad artifacts and model train displays. A fresh slate of board members volunteered in 2019 to create a new culture at the museum, become self-sufficient, while diligently working towards future goals. The purpose of RMSA is to gather, preserve, and display artifacts, documents, letters, and equipment related to the history of the railroad in San Angelo and the Concho Valley. Core programming includes living history tours and the Know the Signs safety program. The new HVAC system will allow continued programming and creation of additional diverse programs to be offered by the museum for all ages and interests. We have extra time today, so I'm going to read a few local sports articles from the San Angelo Standard-Times. Mike Lee says, Boys Ranch football team revels in end of state's longest losing streak. By Mike Lee, special to the San Angelo Standard-Times, published October 7th. The students at Boys Ranch, located in a remote area of the Texas Panhandle, must be in their rooms by 9:30 or 10 p.m. every night. Last Friday, though, they were out on the streets well past midnight. The students were allowed to break curfew for a special occasion. The varsity football team was returning home from Booker, where the Rough Riders had beaten the Kiowas 38-14 and ended a 49-game losing streak that had endured for 5 years. When the team bus pulled into Boys Ranch at about 12:30 a.m. Saturday, the community fire truck escorted it down the main street with red lights flashing and the siren blaring. It's not like the noise was going to wake up anyone. The students were all there with banners, handshakes, and hugs for their conquering heroes. They turned on the lights and the scoreboard at the football stadium, second-year head coach Aaron Wampler said. The whole community was there to welcome us home. They got to ring the victory bell, which hadn't been done in a long time. Not since September 16, 2016, when Boys Ranch beat Shamrock 28-19. The 49-game losing streak consumed the final six games of 2016, plus four consecutive winless seasons from 2017 to 2020. Even though the Class 2A Rough Riders lost their first four games this season, Wampler sensed that the end of the streak was near. We told the kids that none of them were around when the streak started. They just inherited it. Because of that, we talked about not letting the streak control their thoughts and how they played, Wampler said. The players were doing things the right way. None of them failed a class, and we had no discipline issues during the first 6 weeks of school. They were winning in all aspects of life, except on the scoreboard in football. It was just a matter of time. When time came to end the streak, the Rough Riders quickly tended to business. They raced to a 30-0 halftime lead over Booker and were able to play their substitutes in a mop-up role in the fourth quarter of the 38-14 win. Junior quarterback Isaiah Brown, who is from the surrounding Panhandle area, passed for 338 yards and three touchdowns. Jaden Slater, a 6'5" receiver who is from outside of Texas, put up 248 receiving yards, three receiving touchdowns, and another score on a jet sweep run. Defensively, junior linebacker Rowdy Barnes from Perryton made 27 tackles. Until the fourth quarter, it was like the kids were waiting for something bad to happen, Wampler said. Some of them didn't know how to react when the game ended. They hadn't celebrated a win before. But they figured out how to celebrate. They were fired up. Some of them probably didn't sleep all weekend. Boys Ranch competes in District 1, 2A Division 1 with Farwell, Panhandle, Olton, Sanford Fritch, and West Texas High. Boys Ranch opens district with 4-1 Farwell on Friday, and the Rough Riders will resume their underdog role. But Wampler is convinced there are a couple of winnable district games as the Rough Riders seek just the second playoff berth in their 74 seasons of fielding a team. We want to change the culture where the Rough Riders are expected to win. We'd like to win a few of these district games and make the playoffs. We want to be chasing gold footballs, Wampler said, referring to the recognized trophy for winning playoff games. While winning football games is great, it's not the primary purpose of Boys Ranch, founded by Carl Farley. For 80-plus years, Boys Ranch has provided residential programs and therapeutic services for at-risk boys and girls ages 5 to 18. These services, at no cost, are available to children across the United States. Because his players come from such diverse backgrounds, success in team sports is often difficult at Boys Ranch. In an attempt at team bonding among his players, Wampler had them visit his home September 24th when the Rough Riders had their open date. We sat around a campfire, the coach said, and each player stood up and shared 4-H's in front of the group. A hero in their life, a hardship in their life, a highlight in their life, and something holding them back in life. It took an hour and a half, but the kids opened up and talked about their lives. Where they come from is very different, but they saw common things in their highlights and hardships, Wampler said. You never know how trying something like that is going to go, but as they were leaving, one of the team captains stood up and said, "Everybody give three guys a hug before you go." I knew then it clicked with them. 1 week later, the Rough Riders ended their losing streak. Coaching at Boys Ranch is not for everyone. You don't go there to build up your record and resume. The 32-year-old Wampler, now 1-3 with the Rough Riders, came after being an assistant coach at Amarillo Caprock for 6 years. I knew Paul Jones, the athletic director here, and their offensive coordinator, Sean Shepard, is an old college friend of mine, Wampler said. They reached out to me and thought I'd be a great fit. I felt like I was called to come here. It's more like a mission trip than anything else. I got here last year, and I haven't looked back since. It's been an awesome experience. Mike Lee writes a weekly high school football column for the USA Today Network's Texas newspapers. Contact him at michaellee7@att.net.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.